Good afternoon, colleagues.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chair and colleagues.
Yes.
Recording in progress.
Afternoon.
Thank you, colleagues. You, Makwanisha, you are audible. Honorable Mana, you are also audible. I think we are all audible. The House Chair has just adjourned the House. So I'm not quite certain if we do form a quorum. Mr. Romano, can you confirm if we do have a quorum?
Good afternoon, sir. We have got six members on the platform, and therefore we do correct.
We do. Are you sure that in the numbers we have on the platform represent the parties that constitute the voting section of the committee?
Chair, we've got Dr. Gondwe with an alternate member of the DA. So if we include there, we have six voting members.
Thank you very much. And that constitutes the quorum for the meeting. Colleagues, good afternoon and welcome. And thank you very much once again for the trust bestowed and on me. May I now invite you, Romano, to flight the agenda for the meeting? Colleagues, this is the agenda for the meeting. So we agreed that we'll meet today. To consider two items is the committee program as well as the draft advert. There is now going to be a briefing on the process to unfold once the meeting is approved, both the program as well as the advert. And then, of course, the first item would be the apologies. Let me check before I take the apologies. Colleagues, do we agree, accept the agenda as presented? Yes, Mr. Okay.
Yes, I rise to support, Chair.
Makwanisha moves. Seconder.
Chair, my apology. I've got a problem with my gadget. I move to second Honorable Makwanisha for adoption of the agenda. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. The agenda has been duly adopted. Right, colleagues, without much ado, let me let us take apologies. Are there any apologies, Mr. Romano?
Chairperson, there is no apology from my side.
There is no apology from your side. Okay, there is a hand of Honorable Horn. Honorable Horn.
Thank you, Chair. Not an apology, just confirming that that Glenys Breitenbach has indicated that she will be able to join only slightly late, so she's still on her way, but Dr. Gondwe is with us in the meantime. Thanks.
Yes, I can see Advocate Breitenbach, I think, is now in the meeting. I also welcome her as well. All right, thank you very much, Honorable Horn. Okay, having concluded the first item, may I then May I invite Ramano to flight the program of the committee? Colleagues, this is the proposed draft program for adoption by this committee. As you recall, that we were given until the 31st of August to complete our task and report to Parliament. So we don't have much time. It's essentially 2.5 months, July and August, plus 2 weeks, the last 2 weeks of June. And I said last time that this period coincides with our recess stroke constituency period. So it means that our parties must grant us opportunity to pull out of party and constituency engagements to be a part of this team to execute our responsibilities. Now I present the program, and we start today. It's the 8th of June. So we have tabled the two items for adoption and have been adopted. And so we are proposing to publish the advert on the 12th of June. So it's remain open for the public. Is invited to nominate suitable candidates. And from the 12th, the day we advertise, until the 7th of July, is essentially around 3 weeks. It's 3 weeks or so. That's the time we allocate for the publication or for the nomination process. And then from the 10th to the 21st of July, it's about 2 weeks or so, the committee must then will receive consolidated information of CVs, and then a report on the CVs that would be published for public comments. So you may want us to meet to look at what is going to go out to public again for comments, but I leave it to that. So in other words, I'm saying is either we leave it to the administration to deal with it, or we meet to look at it and then okay it, that all CVs must be published for comments. I would get sick guidance from your colleagues. And then we come back on the 24th to the 28th to do shortlisting of candidates. And then on between the 1st to the 18th, 18 August, we deal with the logistics for interviews, as well as ensure that candidates are being screened during that period. So in other words, 1 to 18 allows for the screening of the shortlisted candidates. 21 to 21st to the 25th, we conduct interviews, and then we deliberate and make recommendations to Parliament. So this is a draft program you may please, I wish to invite your comments on the program. I should say that when we say 21 to 25, it means that it depends on how many days we allocate for interviews. We may, if we say one day, so it means that it must be that one day between the 21 and the 21st and the 25th of August. Again, for screening, I'm waiting for the parliament to come back to me to indicate how many days they will need to do screening. But once again, it depends on the number that would have shortlisted, the number of candidates that would have shortlisted. So, but we are just allocating 2 weeks for that process. It may be shortened, but of course, all of it depends on the volume of work that has to be done and the availability of people that would be doing a screening during that time. With that, colleagues, I table the program for consideration and adoption by this committee. All right. So I'll take Mr. Horn and Mr. Magwanishe and Ms. Lesoma in that order, please. Mr. Horn.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think in principle, the program as tabled should be supported. I think you asked for our view on whether all CVs should be published and public comments be invited. From our side, I think we would be in support of such a step. I think public comments and public participation is both necessary and will hopefully, as in the past, enrich our ability to make sound decisions. Chair, may I also just raise the one issue, and that is around screening, and that not necessarily around the period set aside for screening, but to ask the question as to whether we are properly informed as to whether screening would in the circumstances suffice. So in 2016, when the previous ad hoc committee embarked on the process of selecting a candidate to be nominated as the next public protector, an argument at the time was made out to say that mere screening is not sufficient given the fact that the requirement is that the public protector should ultimately qualify for top secret security clearance. At the time, ultimately, I believe, and I know that the content advisors available to us this time around were on board at that stage, so hopefully their memory would be better than mine. My recollection is that ultimately the committee settled for mere screening, but that it was nonetheless somewhat controversial, also given the fact that the then deputy public protector was also one of the candidates, that it was public knowledge that he would never qualify for top secret clearance due to the fact that he was not a South African citizen for no other reason. So may I just request that we consider that specific issue and that we just satisfy ourselves that screening as a process much simpler and less intense than vetting would suffice in the circumstances. Thank you.
Okay. No, I think you've made the point. Mr. Magwanishe.
Thank you very much, Chair. I also agree with Honorable Horn that in principle we must support the program as articulated, given what you have already said, Chair, that some of the dates that are there are outer dates. It does not mean that we'll interview for 4 days, but it must be within the dates that are given there. I think we should support the program, but I would implore the Chair to, as soon as possible, to meet with the Minister for State Security
that there must be a dedicated support for screening, because if we just give them for the dates that we have agreed to, I doubt that they will be able to do that thing in 2 weeks. Our experience in justice is that we must always sit on them to be able for them to meet the required time. So I would support the situation which you get what it is the minister to agree to give that particular support and give her the tight deadlines that we are having. But outside of that, we would not be able to meet the deadline. And also the issue raised by Honorable Horn, I mean, I think vetting usually takes much more time. And if we go for vetting, I think that we will not be able to even to meet October with the vetting process. So if there is no strict restriction in law that restricts us, I will support the screening. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Makwanishe. Ms. Losoma, after Losoma, I will take Advocate Brandenburg, Honorable Mananiso, and Honorable Magetsi in that order. Ms. Losoma. Ms. Losoma, you will, I'm sure she's struggling because she's abroad. I think let's keep her because I think she's experiencing some challenges. Let's go to Advocate Bradenbach, Mananeso, and then Tlape. Advocate Bradenbach.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and good afternoon to everybody. I support the Honorable Horn and Honorable Magwanishe. The vetting is going to be an issue. We will not be able to meet our deadlines if we have vetting. But we do need to be, I think we need to ask for a dedicated team for screening and also for a very thorough screening. The last screening process left quite a lot to be desired at the last round of interviews in 2016 or whenever it was. So that's something that I would urge you to take up with State Security, that they have a dedicated and very thorough process of screening. And then at some point, Chair, we need to talk about the logistics of the interviews that may not be on the topic for discussion for today. But we certainly need to, at the last round of interviews, we interviewed continuously for almost, 24 hours. The panel was exhausted, the candidates were exhausted, and we need to, I think, plan a little better this time around to avoid that kind of situation. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We are taking note of that. Mananiso?
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by welcoming the presentation and as well agree that let us adopt this particular document as a living document so that we are able to do amendment when it's necessary. And one would want to as well agree on the issue of dedicated support team for screening. And the other thing, Chairperson, one would want to make an addition on is with regards to publicity. I want to just add that let us use as well radio, community radios to ensure that everybody gets this publication of this particular appointment so that we don't leave anyone behind. And let us agree here that all 12 official languages will be used for that publication. That's it from me, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Tlape.
Thank you, Chair. Greetings to you and greetings to my colleagues on the platform. Chair, let me also agree that we adopt this draft, as Honorable Mananiso is saying, as a living document so that we ensure flexibility should a need arise. Chair, on the program, you requested also that you get guidance on the date of the 20 to 21st after consolidation publications of CVs for comments. I would submit, Chair, that after the admin has consolidated, let's meet and have a feel of the work at hand so that as and when we're going to shortlist, we would be knowing how many are there and everything, so that before they publicize for public comments, publish for public comments, we would have met and they present to us how many are they. I would also, Chair, agree with the notion that you do facilitate some of the work at hand through your back office, making contact with SSA, as Honorable Magwanisha said, so that everything that needs support out of this committee should be done well in time. So that will be my submissions, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, let me just check if I was able to capture everything that was said. Was that I must secure a meeting with the Minister SSA to give us a dedicated support team to assist us with the screening process. And that is screening, it's not vetting. I think colleagues emphasized that point. And I know that the HR will also be attending to that process as well. Our HR unit in Parliament checking the qualifications and all that. I think, let me say, they'll be working hand in glove with the team that would be provided by the Minister SSA. Last time, the police were used as well, just to check if the candidates do not have any criminal record. So it means that the team that will put together for the screening process, it will be the SSA, the SAPS, as well as our HR division. Each of these three parties will be attending to their own areas of interest. Do you agree to that?
In order, Chair.
Thank you very much. And then two, that we must look at the logistics, and we'll have to come back on that one because it speaks directly to the work when we have received the CVs and we know how many candidates that we'll have to deal with. So we'll come back to this item at a later stage once we have the candidates, the list of candidates. And then the team in Parliament will communicate, will comment on the language, communication policy. And there is a request that the advert must go to local radio stations as well. And of course, must be in all languages. Can I get a quick comment from the team of Parliament on that one, if it fits with the of the existing policy?
Yeah, Chairperson, in terms of languages, I can confirm that all adverts that we publish are in all official languages. And then with regards to radio stations, we will communicate with the communications team just to try and establish if they have the budget from there. I think that's all that I can say for now, but we will speak to them and report to you.
Please do that and then report back. Right. And then there was a suggestion that we must meet to look at the consolidated information that comes from the nomination process. May I look at this? Screening. Taking from what you colleagues have said, that the first phase, shortlisting phase, is when, for example, we eliminate candidates that don't meet the qualification criteria. We eliminate the candidates whose papers are not complete. We eliminate candidates that do not possess South African citizenship. And also four, we eliminate, those whose CVs do not demonstrate proven leadership and managerial skills. But this information, number four, may not be clearly visible, on the CV itself. Maybe it may require us to test it during the interview. But when the team in the administration has looked at that and eliminated those, they will then give us a matrix that indicates all the candidates whose CVs, all the candidates who were eliminated and the reasons for elimination. And only if we approve that indeed they were rightly eliminated, that will accept that as the first shortlist. Okay, so I just want to repeat, the first shortlist, it's just like a desktop type of exercise. We eliminate those that don't meet the qualification criteria. We eliminate those that whose papers are not complete. Maybe they have not completed the, yes, and there are no supporting required documents. And three, those that do not have possess South African citizenship. And four, I pack four because it may be an issue that may be tested later, the issue of proven leadership and managerial skills. That's the first shot of the screening process. And then the second screening process is upon the return of the comments from the public, we may have to look at what the public has to say on each of the candidates, and then do the second shortlisting. That would actually involve the members here. The first one may be administrative. We simply get the report, and if we are happy with it, we adopt it. But the second one, it involves us because we'll have the comments from the public. That constitutes the second shortlisting process. And then the third shortlisting process is after we have received the results of the screening process, because the screening process may come back and say, no, a candidate A has this question mark and that question mark, and on that basis, his or her name must not go forward. So that's the process. And this process must then give us the number that you want to interview at the end of the day. So it means that you must agree upfront what is this maximum number of candidates that must be called for interviews. And after having gone through all these three phrases of shortlisting, I'm not quite sure if I was audible or was clear enough in the manner I've presented it. Can I get your comments?
You are in order, Chair. Very clear.
Is that in order, colleagues?
Yes, Chair, yes. We agree.
Thank you very much. So that is supported. All right. So thank you. Now, having gone through this, can we then move to the second part of our agenda to take the presentation on the advert itself? Once we are done with that, we'll then look at the process, a briefing on the process that would actually include what I've just indicated. Colleagues, this is the advert. Take us through. Colleagues, you have seen the advert. Must I take it as read? It's essentially, yes. Yes, colleague, who's that? Let me just
see. My apology, Chair, to be rude and shouting at you. Chair, I will suggest that for completeness, let's just advocate Bonani through your good self, just read it for the public also to know, because we shouldn't assume that the public have read it, because it's an open process and I think everybody has got an interest. Thank you so much, Chair.
All right. So I start by saying that the qualification criteria is already set out in section 193 of the Constitution and section 1A of the Public Protector Act. And so let me invite Bonani to read it. Bonani, can you just read the document?
Okay, sir. It says the ad hoc committee to nominate a person for appointment as public protector invites members of the public and organizations to nominate suitable candidates for appointment as the public protector. Applications will also be accepted. The public protector is a state institution supporting constitutional democracy established in terms of Chapter 9 of the Constitution of 1996. The public protector has the power to investigate any conduct in state affairs or in the public administration in any sphere of government that is alleged or suspected to be improper or to result in any impropriety or prejudice, to report on that conduct and take remedial action. The public protector has the additional powers and functions prescribed by national legislation. The public protector is appointed by the president on the recommendation of the National Assembly for a non-renewable term of 7 years. The person recommended for appointment as public protector must be a South African citizen who is a fit and proper person to hold such office and who A, is a judge of a high court or is admitted as an advocate for or an attorney and has for a cumulative period of at least 10 years after having been so admitted, practice as an advocate or an attorney, or is qualified to be admitted as an attorney, or as an advocate or attorney, and has for a cumulative period of at least 10 years after having so qualified, lectured in law at a university, or has specialized knowledge of or experience for a cumulative period of at least 10 years in the administration of justice, public administration, or public finance. He has for a cumulative period of at least 10 years been a member of parliament. F has acquired any combination of experience mentioned in paragraphs B to E for a cumulative period of at least 10 years. And then applications and nomination must contain the full name, address or email address and contact details of the person or organization making the nomination. A signed acceptance of the nomination by the nominee and the curriculum vitae containing the nominee's full name, ID and gender. contact details, including physical address, telephone, cell phone number, and email address. Relevant previous work experience, including relevant dates and organizations concerned, and academic qualifications. As part of the selection process, all shortlisted candidates will be subjected to processes such as suitability screening, reference checks, and qualifications verification. Applications and nomination must reach Mr. Wodan Raman, or Community Secretary, by later than. We have not yet set up the date there. And then from there, we just provide the telephone number of the Community Secretary and indicate that it is issued by Mr. Visit Lava, who is the chairperson of the committee.
All right. That's it. Thank you very much, colleagues. I now present to you the advert, the draft advert. Maybe when you comment on the advert, please just comment on when, at what stage do you ask people to fill in the questionnaire. If it is during the time when during the nomination process, because it's nomination and acceptance of nomination, if we accept that it must happen during that time, must we indicate that in the advert that a candidate would be required to fill in a questionnaire? Which will be accompanied by the advert and other important documents. Colleagues, the matter is on the platform, on the table.
Thank you, Chair.
Yes, Mananiso.
Chairperson, aligning myself with what you have said, one agrees that when we issue the advert, let us be detailed as well in terms of that nomination process of having all the documents of a nominee and as well all the supporting documents should be, because of, for me, the issue of compliance, it starts with the submission of everything that we need. So it is important that we emphasize at that particular point when the advert is out. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other comment? All right. It doesn't look like there is any further comment on this. It's fine. We will. Romano, can we then amend it to include that there would be a requirement to fill in the questionnaire?
Noted, Chair.
All right. Okay, colleagues, now that we have accepted the draft advert, can I get the mover and the seconder? Mananiso, I take it as that you were moving for acceptance?
Yes, sir, it's in order.
Thank you. Seconded by?
Lesoma, Chair.
Lesoma. Seconded by Lesoma. Thank you very much. The advert is duly adopted, subject to the incorporation or that the candidates will be required to fill in that questionnaire. All right, we are done. Can we then go to the briefing on the process itself? I just need to get a sense that we will be please take us through. Who's going to take us through, Romano?
Chair, it will be Ms. Christine Sexton.
Okay. All right. Over to Ms. Christine.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Christine Silkstone, and I'm the content advisor that's been allocated to this committee. Most of the points, please just tell me if I start talking too fast Or if you want me to slow down, I get a bit nervous. So, but most of the points have already been covered. And so I'm just going to pick up on a few things. I think in terms of the first slide, we're all well aware of what the committee has been established to do. But the important point is that Advocate Mkhubane's term of office expires on the 14th of October. So that also affects the pressure of work or the time frames in which we have to work. And then obviously we have been, our terms of reference tell us that we need to report to the National Assembly by the 31st of August. Next slide. Although many of you will be familiar with this work, I'll just sort of quickly sort of go through it and highlight, give a sense of what the PPA is expected to do in terms of the constitutional mandate and also in terms of the Public Protector Act and other bits of legislation. So the Public Protector is one of the Chapter 9 institutions, and these are institutions established in terms of the Constitution to act independently in supporting and strengthening constitutional democracy. And these are very important institutions. They have a whole chapter to themselves within the Constitution. Like Parliament has its own chapter and the Executive has its own chapter. They are very important, and the judiciary. The Public Protector itself is an ombud. It's not a commission. And it is established to ensure government's accountability and to provide remedies for maladministration and abuse of authority. The Public Protector is empowered to investigate, report on, and take appropriate remedial action in connection with a whole wide range of wrongdoings that happen in the public administration. And as we know, that remedial action is binding. Then Section 182.2 of the Constitution provides that the Public Protector also has additional powers as prescribed and functions as prescribed by national legislation. Next slide. Then just moving on to the Public Protector Act. Again, it just spells out the Public Protector's empowered to investigate maladministration, abuse or unjustifiable exercise of power, unfair, discourteous or other improper conduct or undue delay, improper or unlawful enrichment or receipt of any improper advantage or promise of such enrichment or advantage, which results in improper prejudice. And all of this would occur within the public sphere. And the point of putting all this out is to show that the mandate is actually very wide. The Public Protector also has the power to appoint their own staff. And this speaks to the chair's point earlier around things like having to have leadership skills. Public Protector has power, subpoena powers, can resolve any dispute or rectify an act or omission by mediation, negotiation, conciliation, or any other means. The Public Protector can also refer matters to the MPA or to any other appropriate public body or authority. Next slide. The Public Protector can request assistance from any person at any level of government performing a public function or other subject to the jurisdiction of the Public Protector. The Public Protector has powers of search and seizure. The Public Protector must report on its activities to Parliament at least once a year. And please note they use the word report, not account. And at any time submit a report to the National Assembly in respect of any investigation. And then, as we well know, the Public Protector has powers in terms of the Executive Ethics Act. Next slide. And then there are a couple of other acts that also give the Public Protector powers. For example, the Public Protector is empowered to investigate corruption as mandated in terms of the Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Activities Act. The Public Protector has the power to receive and address protected disclosures from whistleblowers in terms of the Protected Disclosures Act. And then there's also powers in terms of the Housing Protection Measures Act 95 of 1998. If you look on the Public Protector's website, in fact, there is I must actually check. There was a booklet that actually set out the Public Protector, all of the powers and functions. And then in terms of the appointment process, it's one which we're quite familiar with. It's basically the National Assembly is responsible for initiating the process and refers the matter to a multi-party committee of the National Assembly. This multi-party committee does its work and nominates a candidate. And then the National Assembly will meet on that. And the important thing here is that the National Assembly must approve the nomination by way of a resolution supported by at least 60% of its members. And then that would go to the president, and the president appoints. One thing that I wanted to just to discuss is that the requirement, or not the requirement, but the facilitation of the involvement of civil society in the recommendation process. And yeah, that in the last public protector process and in processes that have happened since has been done by way of asking for public comment and by ensuring that the abbots are widely distributed, that there is a media campaign. And in fact, in the last public protector process, and even with the deputy public protector process, there was a lot of comment from civil society on the process. So it would be nice if that happened again. Then in terms of the selection criteria, and here I'm just really looking at the essential criteria as set out in the Constitution, and in terms of Section 1A of the Public Protector Act. Section 193 of the Constitution provides that the public protector must be a South African citizen, a fit and proper person to hold a particular office, and comply with any other requirements prescribed by national legislation. And then when you look at the actual Public Protector Act, and Bonani actually read this out, word. Just to the judge, or for a cumulative period of at least 10 years. And just remember that this act was enacted in 1994. It was one of the very first acts of the democracy. And so the 10-year period was set then. But a person who has practiced as an advocate or attorney for a cumulative period of at least 10 years, is qualified to be admitted as an advocate or an attorney and has lectured in law at a university for a cumulative period of at least 10 years. So in other words, a legal academic, has specialized knowledge or experience in the administration of justice, public administration or public finance for at least 10 years, has been an MP for at least 10 years, and has any combination of the above experience. But that last one doesn't apply in the case of the judge. And then the last part are the provisions regarding a process. And please, Chair, just stop me if I'm repeating stuff that has already been said. But just to say that there are no formal rules or guidelines to guide this process, the specific process, but that the previous processes, appointing the public protector and other public office bearers and commissioners to the, for example, to the Human Rights Commission or the CG, can really guide the process. We've discussed the advert and the closing date, the compilation of CVs. The issue that I thought about is that we just need to decide how we deal with late nominations and applications. Then the publication of CVs on the Parliament's website for public comment. And just to note in that one that certain information, personal information, is redacted. So we don't publish things like people's ID numbers or where they live, all that sort of thing, because obviously that could constitute a safety concern, and it would be a poppy issue. And then we've already discussed the time allocated for comment. And then the one thing I wanted to discuss, and this would also apply to whatever comes up in screening, is how do we address negative comments received? And this also speaks to Mr. Horn's question around what happened with the DPP situation in the previous public protector process. And if information comes to light and it's potentially very prejudicial or could cause embarrassment, there needs to be discussion beforehand about how will that be dealt with? Will the candidate be informed, given them an opportunity to either address it or get the information that will rebut the information, or to be able to withdraw from the process if they don't want that information in the public sphere? So that's just something to think about. And then also important that any of the comments that come out of the publication will be made available to members, put into their shortlisting and their consideration of the interview process. The questionnaire is a very useful document. It covers like the normal things like ask the candidate to put their educational details into a table and so on. But it also has, if the committee agrees, it would also contain questions around, you know, why do you, along the lines of, you know, why do you believe you are the right person to be a public protector, and so on. But the very important thing in that one is that there is a question around disclosure. So you can ask, you know, it would give the candidate an opportunity to say, for example, that they have undergone a disciplinary process, or they are undergoing a process, or they have a speeding fine, or so on. And it's an integrity thing. They have an opportunity to bring it up front. The shortlisting, that will happen. Screening, we've discussed that. And then the interviews, that I'm sure the committee will want to discuss that. And I think Ms. speak about that. And then the one question was, you know, I just wanted to comment about the last time we had the interview process. The decision was to hold the interviews all on one day. And that was it. It was, we started very early in the morning and we went through to, I think, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And it was quite grueling, not just on the panel members, but on the candidates, because the candidates who appeared at 2 o'clock in the morning, 1 o'clock in the morning, had been sitting there from early in the morning. They weren't allowed to leave the room. So the reason for doing that was because they didn't want later candidates to be, the earlier candidates to be prejudiced by not having, not being able to hear the kind of questions that were being asked. But I'm sure that there are ways in which that can be dealt with, you know, that if the committee decides to overrule this, we can have similar questions that probe the same kind of, same area that we want to be probed. So yes, I think those are that. That's all I really wanted to say, and I just want to thank you. That's it.
Yeah, thank you very much. Okay, can you bring back the last slide, slide number 8? I want colleagues to comment on it. Oh, slide number 15. Sorry, slide number 15. Yeah, colleagues, we have already concluded that. The questionnaire will be distributed before shortlisting. It's part of the nomination process. That's when the candidate accepts his or her nomination, that you'll be requested to fill in the questionnaire, providing us all the necessary information. And so on. It is that document that will also indicate what other documents must accompany the questionnaire, the CV. Sorry, the questionnaire and the CV. All right. And then on the how many candidates to be shortlisted, we leave that to later. We've already agreed to that. And the timeframes, let me go to, I think we've agreed on the timeframes. We've also agreed on the interviews, the duration of the interview per candidate. will be determined by the number of candidates that will be available for interviews. That also includes the number of days for the whole interview process, whether it's 1 day or 2 days. And all of that is dependent on how many candidates we'll have. We'll pack it for later. Colleagues, is there any comment that you want to make? I thought I should just go back to this because some of these issues have already been agreed to. Colleagues, any other thing?
Well captured.
Yes. I can see Honorable Janji and Honorable Klabe.
No, Chair. No, thank you, Chair. I want to address myself to the first issue to be considered. And I think it's material for me, and I don't want to just gloss over it. Answering the question that says, do you do questionnaire before or after shortlisting? Now, I want to be very clear in my proposal that I would prefer you do the questionnaire after shortlisting. It's going to help us getting more focus in what we're trying to do. Because if you do that before shortlisting, so if you get 100, 200 people applying, you're already creating an administrative unnecessary load for ourselves. For people who might not even meet the kind of stricter requirements that we're looking for. Because once we get into shortlisting, you talk about 10 or so, if there's extra, you then ask those people to do the questionnaires. Because you are now beginning to get focused. So it gets you to the next phase of your interview process than wanting everybody else that applies to fill a questionnaire. So I would lean more on doing the questionnaire after shortlisting. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for that suggestion. Ms. Honorable Chape, and then I thought I saw Makwanishe. All right, Chape, and then Lesoma.
Thank you, Chair, listening to what you just presented and what Honorable Janji has just indicated, I wrote on my notes after shortlisting for the very same reasons that he has just alluded to. And on the bullet on interviews, yes, let's pack it, but I would request that we have a meeting, preparatory meeting for the interviews to say this is the work at hand, how we'll do it and everything so that we don't have glitches when the real process starts. It will be proper that in between those days we schedule a meeting so that we prepare ourselves thoroughly to consider those durations, length, and all everything. Thanks.
That is duly noted. Lesoma?
Okay, without repeating myself, I think my colleagues have covered me, because definitely if you say everybody that would have been nominated and accepted, then do fill up the questionnaire. It's going to be not that you are lazy to read, but also it's unnecessary because others would really, as the metrics that you indicated earlier on, would have put them not as a potential people to be shortlisted, so to say, in terms of the criteria based on the advert. I'm covered then, Chair. Thank you so much.
Bye. Thank you very much, Honourable Minor. Is there an objection to the questionnaire going out to the shortlisted candidates only? Right, there is no objection to that. Colleagues, I think we have concluded our meeting. So unless there is anything that it's urgent that requires our attention, but I conclude this meeting with a request that we will have to convene a meeting on the to consider the consolidated information. It will be a virtual meeting. It will be on the 11th or 12th of July before we publish the CV so that you know what we are publishing. Agreed?
Agreed, Chair.
Thank you so much. Colleagues, thank you very much for your time. We're all required to be back to Parliament. The meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
See.